This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Yeah, what's left of it?
Welcome to Shutters Inc. podcast, episode 2017-1.
362. Yes. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com.
And I'm not.
No, you are not. That, from Melbourne, Victoria, Australia, from creativephotoworkshops.com.au, is Mr. Glenn Lavender. How are you?
You know, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for asking. Oh, no, you didn't ask that.
I didn't ask. How was your break?
I haven't broken anything.
Well, that's good to hear. Good to hear.
Actually, no, I haven't broken anything, not even a lens.
Excellent. Excellent.
My break, my absence from the podcast has been nothing short of terrifying. No, that's not my answer. Right. No, it's been about 37 days, I think.
That sounds about right.
Well, we had Christmas, we had New Year.
Yep.
And my dad's still in hospital after all that. Jeez. My mum's still driving me crazy. Right. And I'm 6 weeks into school holidays, and what little sanity I had went with the little sanity that I had.
Right.
And yourself? How are you, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well.
We haven't spoken. We haven't seen each other.
No.
Not that we ever see each other.
No.
Still. Have you been well? Did you have a lovely break? Did you have a break?
Not really, because I worked right through the Christmas New Year period at the radio station. I was on what they call the skeleton staff. Yeah, but I actually don't mind doing that because the business shuts down for essentially.
You know why I know that?
What's that?
You know why I know they didn't mind doing it?
Why? Because I've told you before?
That's what you said at the end of the last episode.
Probably, yes.
Well, we're asking about what we're going to do.
That's right. So, yeah. So,
to save everybody else the pain.
Yeah.
Was it as quiet as you expected?
Well, speaking of pain, over the break that we had from podcast production, I had a physical hard drive failure.
Really?
Yeah.
Not a mental hard drive failure.
No. A physical hard drive failure. So an internal drive, not a Western Digital, it was a Seagate Barracuda, 2 gigabyte drive. But here's the interesting thing. I have let me try that again. I have two terabyte drives.
2017 episode one
of which was internal drive and one of which was an external drive. And
which one was this?
Well, here's the thing. It appeared at first that the external drive was on the way out, which made more sense to me because it's spinning even when my computer is shut down.
Yes.
And I thought, yeah, well, that drive's been spinning pretty much nonstop for 6-7 years. It makes sense that it's about to fail. So before it completely failed, I copied a whole bunch of data to the internal 2 terabyte drive, and it was the internal 2 terabyte drive that was actually on the way out. And so a bunch of stuff that I, foolishly moved, I should have copied, all went to the internal drive just before it died and is completely irretrievable. It includes, the last 4 years' worth of Shutters Inc. podcast work parts and sessions.
So there's an upside to it then.
Yes. It included my photos directory, but as everybody knows, I have a regular backup routine for my photos, so I had thankfully done a fresh backup to my, the secondary drive that sits in the cupboard behind me only 3 days prior to when the drive failed. So my photos were safe. It included my extensive collection of music, which is about 150,000 tracks. Thankfully,
Any of those not Bruce Springsteen?
A handful are not.
Okay.
So that was all backed up. So there was pretty much everything that I had that was critical, I had backups of in some way, shape, or form. There was some stuff that wasn't backed up, but it was not critical. So I thought it was worth mentioning because, every so often we talk about how important it is to have a backup routine for your images or for anything else that's critical to your life. It's just one of those things. You can never predict when a drive's going to fail, and this is just one of those instances. So
you just got to be prepared.
That's exactly right.
Preparations in place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Now, I noticed over the break.
Well, so I zoned out after called a skeleton crew.
Yeah. So, so I bought myself a new internal drive.
And, did you? Why?
Because they tend to be very good as a rule.
Okay.
And so I wanted a bigger drive, so I bought a 3 terabyte drive, split it up into two partitions of 1.5 terabytes each. And, yeah, I'm slowly rebuilding. Also, over the last month, I have jumped in, boots and all.
Have you?
Linux, all the way, except for audio.
Really?
Except for audio and video.
So, but when you say all the way, you mean some of the way.
Most of the way.
Just checking this.
So, for everything else, so for all my photo editing and...
Is that like becoming a vegetarian? Or a vegan? Is it the same kind of pompous... kind of, no, I'm a Linux user. No. I'm afraid I'm PC intolerant. I'm Microsoft intolerant.
I guess you could look at it that way if you wanted to.
I just wonder if you had like the same sort of mental sort of, upper class. No, we don't do those.
It's not so much about being upper class. I've explained my reasons for wanting to get away from Microsoft for a while now.
Did you? In the podcast?
Yes, in the podcast. You zoned out again.
Oh, your audio one.
Yeah. and likewise for wanting to get away from Adobe as well.
Really?
So I've had an interesting month of, importing all of the images that I have into Lightroom. Now, interestingly, when I first started dabbling with Darktable about 6 months ago, it was on an old laptop that I had that I wasn't using for anything else. And so I thought, well, this is a good way for me to learn about Linux without committing my main desktop machine to a change that I still don't know enough about. And so I started dabbling on the laptop, installed Darktable. And at the time... the version of Darktable that was out at that point in time could not automatically import all of my metadata from Lightroom. It could do some of it, but couldn't do all of it. But I did work out a way to achieve the bits that Darktable couldn't do for itself. And it required a little bit of, to-ing and fro-ing with other file formats and, text editing and all sorts of stuff.
Yeah,
but it was a workaround, and I actually began to write a fairly lengthy blog post on how to go through this process. So if anyone else wanted to follow in my footsteps, they would be able to. However, around about the time that we wrapped up at the end of last year, the new version of Darktable shipped, which is 2.2.0, and what do you know? They have included in the new version of Darktable the ability to read Lightroom's XMP sidecar files without having to do any other mucking around. You can simply point Darktable to the exact same folders that you were using for your Lightroom catalog. And if you've got that option switched on to create XMP sidecar files in Lightroom, and all of those sidecar files exist alongside your existing image files, then Darktable will just suck all of that information straight into its database, and it'll bring in all your star ratings, your keywords, your color coding, everything. Development settings, the whole lot. So,
what about contrast?
Yep.
Sharpening?
Yep.
Shadows and highlights?
Yep. Everything.
Vibrance?
Everything.
What about if you put like a vignette on it?
Does that as well.
Really?
Yep.
What if you've put it into black and white?
Yep. Does that too. There is one thing that I have found that doesn't translate perfectly, and
spot
that is
color?
No, it's the tone curve, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why, but
there's... You know, because you're an audiophile, you worry about those tone curves, those things that's more important to you than anything else.
That's right. It's all about the tone, baby.
All about the tone curve, dude. Look at the bell curve on that.
So I'm sure that that will be something that the guys with Darktable will get on top of pretty quickly. It seems to be the only thing that hasn't translated perfectly, because what happened was
So you think they'll get to the top of the curve pretty quickly is what you're saying?
Yeah. So what happened was I started looking through my folders full of images in Darktable, and every now and again there'd be this thumbnail. It was just pure black. And I'd look at it and go, I wonder what's going on there. Is the file corrupt or something? And so I'd go into, like, a double click on that thumbnail, which would then take it into the develop module in Darktable, and it would show me the entire history that it's imported from Lightroom's development module. So it would show me, you know, here was the original import, and then, you know, you did an exposure adjustment, or you did a contrast adjustment, or you did a whatever, and they're all listed in the order in which they were applied in Lightroom. And at some point, I just happened to click on an earlier history state of one of these images, because even when you went into the dark into the develop module in Darktable, this image, which had been a completely black thumbnail, would come up as a completely black image as well.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, this is weird. And then at one point, I just happened to click on an earlier state in the history of the develop, you know, things that had been applied.
Yeah.
And suddenly, bam, there was the image. Yeah, so you just click on an earlier state and suddenly the image would appear. And I went, whoa, hang on, what happened there? And so then I would just incrementally work back through all of the history states.
You should have done step by step, probably would have been better.
That's right. And when I got to the tone curve, suddenly it would go black again. And when I
You know what it probably is?
What is it?
It's probably not transferring the tone curve properly.
Probably not. You might be onto something there.
I'd advise them about that.
So when I go to the tone curve module within Darktable, the curve was just weird. Like, it was not even visible. It was off the chart.
It was a straight line. It wasn't even a curve.
Well, no, because it was like it went up the left-hand side of the box. Like, you know how it should be a 45-degree angle.
Vertical line.
Yeah, but you know how it should be a 45-degree angle, right? From bottom left to top right. As a linear tone curve.
Oh, yes, linear.
Right?
It's a line.
Imagine you put one point on and you dragged it all the way to the top left-hand corner.
It's a vertical line.
And there was no radius to it. It was like two straight lines.
It's just a straight line.
Yeah, okay.
One of those linear straight lines, but vertical.
You have no idea, do you?
It has no rightward-leaning tendencies, is what you're saying.
That is correct.
The lefty.
Until it got to the top corner, and then it went completely horizontal.
Have you emailed them?
I haven't yet.
How are they going to fix it, Bruce?
They will fix it.
If you haven't told them, you're probably the only person using the program. And if you're not going to tell them, how are they going to fix it?
I will be telling them. So I only discovered...
Can you ask them, when you email them, can you do me a favor? Can you ask another question?
What's that?
Why in the hell do they call it Darktable?
Because...
Okay, I get Lightroom.
Yeah.
Dark room.
Mm-hmm.
Darktable?
Well...
Does that assume there's a light table somewhere?
Well, there is a light table. Well, a light table was what people used when they were shooting transparencies.
Well, it was a big light box, effectively.
Well, some people referred to it as a light table.
They call it a dark table. It's just confusing. Make it something photographic named. How about better than Photoshop?
I think there might be some slight copyright issues.
Photoshopforfree.com. You know, I mean, as a marketing tool, it's not really great. Oh, I'm looking for an alternative to Photoshop. You're not going to go and search in dark table now, are you? Mind you, GIMP doesn't have much going for it either, I've got to say.
No, GIMP's an awful name.
It's a name.
Yeah, it's a horrible name, but anyway. So, yeah, so far I am really...
So how was your break?
It was great. Yours?
Excellent. What?
Yours?
I haven't broken anything.
It's Groundhog Day. So what are we going to cover this week?
I thought that was it.
Right. Okay.
Haven't we done it?
We have. All right, so shall we move on to some of our links?
There was something I was going to say.
Oh, okay.
It's gone now. must have been like
absolute rubbish.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll come back to me.
It probably will.
So what have you got to talk about? I don't think I've got anything. What have you got
all
to
right,
talk about?
All right. So the first thing I came up with was the best photographs.
Oh, your first thing is Darktable.
2016. Yeah.
Oh, I was looking at Darktable.
Best photographs of 2016 in pictures. I don't know how they would do the best photographs of 2016 and not be in pictures. Well, as judged by theguardian.com, I guess.
Oh, okay. So the Guardian's viewpoint.
Yes.
Because you can't always rely on what you read in the press. Because just before this podcast, I was reading an article on several beaches in Victoria, down here where I live, are being closed due to water quality.
Yes, I saw that. 15 well,
three,
of them.
Three of the 15 beaches they mentioned are suburbs that don't have beaches.
Oh, okay.
Which I thought fairly confusing, since they're fairly inland. Yeah, like 20 kilometres or so.
Right.
And don't have a beach. So you can't always, so this might say best photos of 2016, but I didn't vote.
No.
And I don't think you did. So this is just somebody's opinion. And it doesn't necessarily mean it's right. So let's have a look what they've got. Are there any good ones?
Look, a lot of them are images that we've already seen. And I just thought it was a worthy
choice. Of course, this is just the best of.
Yeah.
Well, that one with the turtle is kind of cool.
I like that.
Yeah, I don't understand it. But I don't like it.
Yeah, something different.
I mean, I understand the importance of the three footballers kneeling down.
Yeah,
but I don't know if it's a great photo.
No,
I suppose if you're looking at best news photos of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah, news stories. Yeah, I think these photos kind of most of these kind of make a bit of sense as far as that's concerned. Yeah. All right. Well, yeah. Yeah. We'll just put them out there and have a bit of a gander.
Yeah, exactly. Next thing, celebrities reveal their public and private personas in intimate double portraits. This was just a personal photography project of a guy by the name of Andrew Walker. And I'm not sure, I don't remember what his involvement was with this film festival or whatever it was, but he managed to get all of these celebrities to sit down and do a double exposure. So he obviously, camera on a tripod, taken one shot, then had them move to the adjacent seat and then take a second shot. So you get two images of the same celebrity in the one frame. I thought it was an interesting idea for a
scene. They didn't have to change seats. They could have just done two photos and moved them over in Photoshop.
No, I think you'll find if you watch the video that's at the end of the article.
Oh, I didn't watch the video.
No, of course
you did. This is the first time I've seen them. I was just saying, don't have, when you're shooting celebrities, you don't really have to ask them to move seats. I mean, they're fairly precious. No, I don't want to change seats. This one's already pre-warmed.
The thing
is the other seat pre-warmed?
You can see by the background that there is a tonal shift to the background. So if you tried to do it with Photoshop, it would require some very, close masking to make it, not obvious that you had done a cut and copy.
Oh. It's got a photo there where you can see the clamp holding the background. Why?
Clamp holding the background.
So the guy called Rami Malek.
Oh, okay, yep.
Standing up.
Yep.
And there's the edge of the backdrop and the stand. It's like, okay. Yeah.
And the one two sure. after it, you can see it.
Have you heard of content-aware Phil? There's a few others. Look, as we go down, there's the back edge of the backdrop. I just don't understand that.
Yeah, no, that's a bit odd because it seems like he had enough room. He could have cropped it out.
Yeah. Or he could have just cloned something in. It's a two-second shot.
Yeah. I hadn't noticed that.
I kind of like it because you're too busy looking at the glorious subjects. I kind of like the shots. There's some good shots there.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the last one where Taraji P. Henson, it's almost like he's or she's known what she was going to do for the right-hand side of the shot and the left-hand side of the shot she's making eyes at her other self.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool.
Well, she's had an idea and she's executed. But so quite a few other ones, like the one above it. He's just coming into view and staring at himself. They're engaging with themselves, which is what the other ones aren't kind of doing. It's just been two versions of themselves.
Yeah, I like it. It's a nice concept.
Yeah, me too.
Nice concept.
Nice.
Anyway, that link will be in the show notes. Amazon Europe's click and bait practices. This was very interesting.
They're selling fishing gear now, are they?
Sorry, fishing gear. Yeah, exactly. So
it's a photography podcast, dude. Don't talk about fishing.
That's right. So apparently a guy ordered, you know, a lens through Amazon. And right. What happened was that it said that the order had been placed.
Right.
But then he gets an email a day or so later saying, oh, sorry, that was an error on the website. The price was listed incorrectly. We're not honoring the order. And his argument is, well, hang on, you took the order, you accepted the order, you are bound, you know, by law to... Yeah, well, that's exactly Amazon's retort, that they're only bound once they ship the product. And so this guy's contention is that they're trying to, you know, entice people to place an order and then hopefully pay the inflated price when the, you know, quote unquote error is revealed to them. So a bit dodgy, but
I don't think it's dodgy at all. I mean,
really,
this is a typical of the modern world where everyone feels they have the right to everything for themselves and the best. Someone makes a mistake and puts a price up wrong on the internet.
Yeah,
an honest mistake, no con, no anything, just a mistake.
Okay.
And then someone goes, and let's say it's a product that hardly ever gets sold.
Yeah.
Okay. And then, so all of a sudden somebody goes to buy, oh, look, 6 months ago, someone that went that school work experience kid and doing the numbers, he's typed in the wrong number. Well, you shouldn't have to honor that price. Now, what if someone's putting up the price at a petrol station, right? They're changing the price.
Yeah.
And all they've got up so far is the 0.9 cents. You know, you just because they haven't finished putting the rest of the price up doesn't mean you get to buy petrol at nothing 0.9.
That's a completely different kettle of fish.
Well, it's not. It's a price that's up and listed.
It is. It's not up.
It's a price that's up there.
If the guy's still on the ladder putting the numbers up, then no, he hasn't.
But it's still on the board saying 0.9 cents. Well, what if they've changed the price, but haven't got onto the board yet? Or, as I saw a sign yesterday, someone said, up to 500% off.
Nice.
They've gone a bit heavy with the zeros. So what? All of a sudden, I'm entitled to have 500% off the products they're selling?
I guess it depends on how often this kind of quote-unquote mistake is happening.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
You know, if this is something
but
that
you'll find any company worth their salt will have a clause to protect themselves from errors in pricing.
Yeah.
Because... it's an error. It's not click and bait practice. Where's the benefit to Amazon to do this? That's a click and bait. Bait implies they're sucking you in where they're going to get an advantage out of you. There's no advantage in the bad press, in this guy ranting and raving for a company that at the end of the day, one lens, 16% off, doesn't really make squat all difference to them.
Hmm.
You know, there's no click and bait whatsoever. There's an error.
Okay.
You know, someone made an error. This guy tried to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
And they failed. They said, no, we can't honor that because it's a mistake.
Okay.
You know, I reckon that happens 1,000 times a day in the world. And they don't see people bleating on the internet about it. So this guy, whoever...
You don't spend much time on the internet, do you?
Can you see my point? It's like, come on, take... You know, what you're trying to do is to take an unfair advantage of something, of corporate... Mr. Big Wig corporate company. I'm going to try to take advantage of this as a genuine. And I've seen this so many times over the years. It's just, it's like, you tried it on, bad luck, it didn't work. Don't bleat and complain about it. Just off you go. But people these days know if they hold their breath and stamp their feet long enough, companies will back down and offer and do the one-off deal to them and lose money. But when it happens to big Mr. Amazon, maybe it doesn't make a difference. But your local everyday little camera store or whatever, if they had that sort of error and had to, maybe they don't get a wage that week.
Mm.
Yeah, it's the self-entitlement of the world. God, so you've got me getting serious now. Well, welcome to 2017, Bruce.
Okay.
Next.
All right, next. At CES this year, Kodak announced they're bringing back Ektachrome.
bring them back. We're bringing back black. Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, and they're even thinking about bringing back Kodachrome.
Really?
Yeah. Now, and they even announced a Super 8 film camera.
Can you just bring me up to speed? What's the difference between ektachrome and Kodachrome?
Well, one's got Coda in the front. The other's got Ekta in the front. It's quite different. One's a yellow and blue box. The other's a yellow and red box. Excellent. It's the emulsion. Okay, right. So Kodachrome had its own specialized emulsion that could only ever be developed in Kodachrome chemicals. And ektachrome...
So were they both an E6 process?
No, that's the point. Kodachrome had its own chemical process.
Right.
Ektachrome had the standard E6 process that pretty much every slide film on the market used.
Right.
So ektachrome you could take into any store and get developed.
Right. So you could take that to a Fuji lab, but you couldn't take Kodachrome.
You could buy the chemicals and do it yourself.
Right.
But Kodachrome, you had to ship out.
Right.
It included processing included in the price.
Right.
And you'd send it back to Mr. Kojak and he'd develop it and send it back to you.
Right.
When you didn't lose it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And they also announced a Super 8 film camera.
Seriously?
At the show as well. Yep.
Wow. Okay.
Cool, eh?
Oh, well, for anyone that wants to embrace analog, off you go. It's all there. Adam sent us a heap of stories over the break.
Oh, see, that's what you haven't got no life, so you just... yeah. Take a break, Ed, you know?
The first one was about Harvard.
Yes.
Oh, and interestingly, the link that Adam has sent us is now gone, but this was about Harvard offering their online photography classes for free.
Yeah.
I can tell you, I went, I signed up, and I watched... 1.5 of the first videos and went, yeah, I'm done.
Really?
Yep.
That bad?
The guy who was doing it was shocking.
Just in the way he delivered the information or?
Yeah, it didn't strike me as overly professional. It was just a
today,
guy.
Today, I like to talk about shutter speeds. Well, now, a shutter speed is the speed that the shutter goes. Now let's talk about apertures. They're short lessons.
Yeah, they were 17 minutes each.
Yeah.
And,
so I've got that sort of time to invest.
You don't.
Right. It seems too much. So what you're saying is you're not recommending it as...
I'm not recommending it.
No. Okay. If anyone else has a gander, please send us an opinion. You know?
Yeah.
I'd like to take someone else's, you know, rather than our man Bruce's opinion.
Of course.
Yeah. Let's get someone I care about's opinion. Right. Adam, you posted the article. Let's make him watch a couple episodes.
That's right.
Adam, you watch a couple episodes and get back to us, dude.
Yeah.
Especially the first one, because that's what put Bruce off, obviously. Yeah,
that's right. Next one was on Petapixel. This was about the Lily drone. Now, just to remind people, the Lily drone was the one that had that great video where... Yeah, people are standing in a field, they hold the drone on the palm of their hand, they give it a little flick, and you'd supposedly pre-program it to do a flight path around you, and you could just stand there in the middle of the field, and this thing would circumnavigate where you were standing, and it'd always keep the camera pointed at you, and you get this lovely aerial fly around.
It's waterproof.
Yeah. So it's all this stuff. Fantastic. Yeah.
We talked about it when we first saw the video.
Looked fantastic. Yeah. Now, these guys raised $34 million. $1 million.
Yeah, you've got to put your little finger to your mouth and say that.
That's exactly right. In Kickstarter funding. And now they've gone, we can't get this product to market. Sorry. Gotcha. Yeah. So that's pretty average. Allegedly, they are using whatever resources they've got left to get whatever money they've got left back to their investors. Which doesn't sound overly promising.
No.
So
8 cents in the dollar or something.
Yeah. So that's very...
There's your Kickstarter dream gone down the toilet, eh? It's kick up the pants rather than Kickstarter. Yeah.
That's right.
It looked like a pretty good drone. And there's a lot of people who posted who were initial investors in this. When it first was announced in 2015, this drone was like, cutting edge, state of the art, you know.
Yeah.
You could do stuff no one else could do. But now, in 2017, and installing it out, lots of people have caught up or overtaken what this thing could do.
Yeah.
So it was no longer, even if it came to market, it was no longer the leading edge, amazing product. It was just yet another drone.
Yeah.
You know? So that, yeah, the time wasn't its friend. And yeah, and then if they could even get it to market, then the demand for it would be lower than it would have been, because once again, it's got so many more competitors.
That's right.
So, as we learned from GoPro, the old drone business is not an easy one.
No. Interestingly, the San Francisco District Attorney's Office has been running a multiple-month investigation into this whole saga. And one of the criticisms they leveled was that the promo video that we spoke about a minute ago and that we spoke about, you know, 12 months ago, wasn't actually shot with a working prototype of the Lily drone. It was shot with a competing product which required two people to fly it. Whoops.
It was a simulated footage, dude.
Yes.
It was a suggestion of what the product would be able to do.
Yes. While we're on the subject of drones, DJI has bought Hasselblad.
Yeah. Well.
Allegedly.
Mostly? Well, they already owned a fair chunk of it.
Right.
For a long time. For like
a year and a bit. It was November of 2015. Yeah.
And I think there was something about they needed capital to put some product out, and so they've invested some more money, and there it goes.
Yeah.
So possibly the Chinese drone company owning the most prestigious camera brand probably outside of Leica, be up there with Leica, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
very bizarre.
Interesting. Interesting.
Watch this space. Well, I'm waiting for the new Hasselblad powered DJI drones.
Yeah, exactly. Now,
this organization.
This next one is a great one. I like this. This again from Adam. This is photographerexcuses.com. You've got to check this link. You've got to check out this link.
I might have to submit a few of it.
To the website, and all it does is it comes up with a blank page. With an excuse from a photographer and a refresh button.
You say poorly lit. I say atmospheric. Oh, you should take pictures of celebrities without them wanting me to do it. If you could just get angry, I'd get in the zone. A photographer is never late, nor is he early. He arrives precisely when he means to.
Plagiarism.
Don't shoot raw. It sounds undercooked.
So the hours of fun there for everyone who wants to go and find some excuses. The next one
Sorry, but that's just how you look in that light.
Next one's on F-stoppers, and this is a small company from the Czech Republic called Edelkrone, who have come up with the Quick Release One, and essentially this is a multi-format quick release device that can screw into the bottom of your DSLR camera body, and it will interface with all of the known mounting mechanisms for tripod heads.
I'm waiting for the two. It does twice as much.
Yes, exactly. So the video is quite short. It's only about a minute long, if I recall. It will be interesting to see whether they get this to market in great quantities, and whether or not they end up being sued for copyright infringement of the mounting
mechanisms. And this quick release plate wasn't filmed with your quick release plate, but with a competitor's one. Yeah. Is that a Kickstarter project?
I don't know. But, it would be fantastic to have one unifying type of mount and release, you know. I don't know about you, but if you've ever been on a shoot with other photographers and you left your mounting plate at home, you brought your tripod, but you didn't bring your mounting plate, but then the other guy's using a different type of mounting plate, you can't use his tripod. It's just horrible.
But you forgot your tripod, but you remembered to bring this plate.
Yes, exactly.
But the plate, surely the plate would therefore be on the bottom of the camera already.
Well, that's where I leave mine.
Yeah, which therefore, if your old tripod plate is normally kept there anyway, and you had your tripod, you had the plate.
That's right.
It's all just stupid.
Okay. The last one from Adam, again from Petapixel, was photographers beware of game face media. This is a mob who allegedly will offer you paid work to shoot sporting events. But apparently they are notorious for not paying their photographers. I will put that in the show notes for anyone that wants to read up on that. Sounds a bit dodgy. Then we move on to Tony White, who sent us a story about people who flash the peace sign in photographs. Now, not meaning to sound racist, but I've noticed that this is very big in the Asian countries. I've not seen it quite as much in Western countries.
It's a little bit more of a cultural thing. Every photograph, they do that for some reason.
Yeah. You've noticed that?
Absolutely. Look, I've been in a million selfies with Asian people on my travels. Because I jump into every selfie I see being done, I jump into it. And we all do it. Right. We either do the one finger to our lips and go, ooh.
Oh, okay.
Or we do the peace sign.
Right.
So if you look up, I'm sure that there's a million photos of me doing the peace sign with some strange Asian person going, why is this big white man standing next to me in my selfie?
So the idea of this story is that they're suggesting that flashing the peace sign in photographs could potentially lead to identity theft. And this all stems from the idea that with resolution getting higher and higher with every successive camera body that hits the market, that there will soon be enough image information for a ne'er-do-well to lift your fingerprints from a photograph. Interesting concept.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that it's really...
Because I'm sure your selfie is so important to everybody, they're going to want to steal it.
Yes.
But here's the thing, though.
They're talking about identity theft rather than anything else.
I'm calling bullshit on this.
Yeah, I'm a bit with you.
Because... what if you don't flash the peace sign? Do you mean they can't do it? I've got a better idea. What's got more detail, an eye?
Yeah.
Or a fingerprint?
Yeah.
If they can lift your fingerprints from the photograph, surely they can scan your eye.
Yep.
And, oh, no, your face, which is a bit bigger. I don't know.
Well,
call me stupid.
As they say in the article, it does require, obviously, stationary fingers, like your fingers can't have any motion blur to them. Yep. They would need to be well lit. They would need to be face on to the camera. They couldn't be at an angle. So there's a lot of ifs and buts to this.
Where everyone's head's in the photo.
Yeah. But the eyes would be just as problematic. You know, if your eyes are partially closed, if you were in the process of blinking, if you were not looking.
It's dark in one half.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's just stupid.
Great story, Tony, but I'm not sure that we're quite at a point
Tony sent it to us. This is my theory.
Yeah.
That Tony sent it to us to see what we would do to us.
Quite possibly.
Would we tear it apart? Because now we're fairly sympathetic when it comes to supporting other people in this field.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I know I am.
Next one was from David Jones. This is a Kickstarter project. How much should a memory cost? This project is to provide a personal photography service to those who are on a low or limited income. I really don't understand what this guy is trying to raise the money to do. Other than he wants money to set up a website where he's going to offer to take people's photos for free. But my thing is, if people are on low or no income, they probably don't have access to the web.
Good point. his proposal is, the average cost of a photographer for a portrait is £50 an hour. That's cheap. This is out of reach for a lot of people. The main part of this price is for the experience rather than developing the images. So part one, my time doesn't cost me anything, so why should I charge others for it? Well, it's called business.
Yep.
This could be why you're homeless, just saying. The service I'll be offering is to be able to attend at location free of charge. Part two, in this digital age, why should people have to pay for images they don't need? The photo album will be delivered via a secure gallery, a la the internet, from the gallery. The client would then be able to select the images they want and how they want them printed, saving money and environment while giving control of the budget to the client. Yeah, so his whole, what do he need? Does he need to set this all up? I aim to raise £100 to help to pay towards updating the website for full commercial use. Well, here's the thing, dude. Yeah. If you charge for your photo work, so I don't know, 50 quid an hour in 2 hours, probably the time it took you to set this Kickstarter project up, you could have got the job done. I'm just saying.
That's right.
I'm just saying. Unfortunately, he only raised £7.
Yeah.
He got three backers to raise £7 for
and
him.
It timed so, out.
Dear Christopher Hall, get a job.
Yeah, exactly. Come up with a better business plan.
Yeah. Come up with a business plan.
Yeah. No, yes. Come up with.
That was a plan.
Come up with a business plan, not just a better one.
What are the risks of challenges? Oh, every project has its challenges. Lower price equals lower service. It certainly sounds like it. How do you replace your gear, dude? How do you, about your public liability insurance? Who's buying? That was an awesome one, Tony. Was it? No, Tony.
It was David.
David? Yeah. That was awesome.
That's great.
That's made by 2017 already. Now, I've got to say, Bruce, you left off probably the best piece out of your list of stuff already.
Oh, what was that?
The very top one.
Sorry?
The very top one on your list.
What was the very top one on my list? Oh, Glenn and Malcolm's article. Yes.
did you see that?
I did.
Are you talking about us? Hello.
I'm talking about you. And I even read it.
It's more than I've done.
Don't remember a damn thing you said, but I read it.
Was that any good?
I believe it was.
Do you know what I'll say about it?
What's that?
The paper stock's lovely.
Oh, is it? I don't have a paper copy.
Didn't have a paper copy.
No, I'm not all la-di-da like you. I had to read mine digitally.
Oh, no, mine got sent to me for free. I wanted to pay for it.
Is that going to be a regular thing? Just to bring everybody up to speed. Malcolm and Glyn jointly wrote an article about travel photography, which was published in Peter Eastway's magazine, Better Photography, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, well, that's, we've got an article in the next two editions as well. So it's a quarterly magazine. So.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a little bit of a
so something. If you do something, a fourth just, one, you'll have a whole year under your belt.
There you go. I'll come up with something.
So well done.
Thanks, mate. Thanks. Can I just say, speaking of 2016?
Yes.
Do you know what Amazon's biggest selling photo product in 2016 was?
No.
Instant film.
What?
Amazon's biggest selling photo product for 2016 in America was Fuji Instant Film.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
What is instant film?
Bruce. Bruce.
Well, you haven't given me a link.
Think about Polaroid photos.
Oh, okay. So that sort of film. Right, okay.
They're called instant photos. Even though I know, they don't happen in an instant. I know these things. But they've always been called instant film.
Right.
I don't know, for just for 30 years or so.
Okay.
Maybe 40, since Professor Land came out with them.
Right.
So Fuji Instax film for their Fuji Instax cameras, where they have quasi-instant photos. But the point is, the biggest selling Amazon photo product was an analog film.
That is bizarre.
Bizarre indeed. Funny about that, isn't it? Yeah. So I thought I'd share that anyway. Now, I haven't watched this, but I came across a YouTube TV show by Chelsea and Tony.
Right.
I don't know who Chelsea and Tony are, but it depends. So it could either be Tony and Chelsea or Chelsea and Tony, depending on which way you look at it. But they do a photographic TV show on YouTube.
Okay.
And I don't know. What's I thought it maybe. Yeah. I think it's called Tony and Chelsea.
Right.
It's learn the art and this is a bit scary. Learn the art and science of photography. But there's new episodes Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So they're putting it out there.
Yeah, right.
They're working hard. And it's called Wanderlust. There you go.
Right.
There's a name to it. And I just thought it might be interesting. Now, I have to warn you, my computer's down to 28%.
Oh, are you on a laptop?
Yeah, and sometimes when it does that, that's the end of me. So right. If I disappear, okay. I've had a lovely episode. Thanks for having me. right. Here's another thing, though. In 2016 in the USA, Canon had the third largest amount of patents applied for.
Wow.
Granted, not applied for, granted, the third largest amount of patents in the US.
Wow.
Just behind IBM and Samsung.
Wow. I wonder how many of those were really legitimate products and how many are just things that we'll put in place that we can patent troll on.
Well, there'll be bits of technology, but they had 3,665 patents granted.
That's crazy. That's 10 a day.
Pretty good, isn't it? You heard that, aren't you? You like that? that's like 100 every 10 days, Bruce. It's astounding.
It is.
So behind them were Google, Intel, LG, and Microsoft doing 5 through 8, which is strange. It's a strange, once again, you're reading the articles. It says Canon came third.
Yeah, so who's fourth?
Just behind IBM and Samsung, they came third. And Google, Intel, LG, and Microsoft occupy positions 5 through 8.
It should be 4.
So who was number 4?
Yeah. That's very weird.
Don't tell you number 4 was. Maybe it was the CIA. I don't know. Yeah. Tell you, but then we'd have to kill you, you know?
That's right.
then I saw this solar-powered time-lapse machine.
Right.
Doing long, long time lapses, which I thought was pretty cool. Yeah, the problem with your typical time lapse, either your camera's going to be connected to power, or you're limited to the lifespan of your battery.
Yes.
Well, this mod came out with a two lens time lapse camera that's with a built in solar panel. Yeah, because you imagine if you're doing those construction photos, time lapse,
and
you
do a time build.
Really? Why?
Yeah, because I thought this was going to be a solar-powered power pack so you can use your camera.
No, it's built-in camera. It's not like having one of those hunting cameras where you leave them out in the field. It's crap, you say.
That's crap. Why
is it?
I want the solar power to be running my DSLR so I can be doing, 2-hour exposures on my DSLR.
Well, it's not going to happen.
Obviously. Because they went down the wrong
route.
They went down the wrong path.
Oh, well, I thought it was a good... You could just blow it out your kabuti.
Right.
Oh, and Adobe have been hinting at upcoming voice-powered Photoshop.
Right. This isn't on your list.
It is.
Where?
It's above solar-powered time-lapse, and it says voice-controlled Photoshop.
Oh, there, right. Okay.
That'll be it. What a giveaway.
That'll be the one. Excellent.
So they're coming out with stuff like crop tool, you could say, and the crop tool would pop up. It'd switch over to the crop tool. Okay. Paintbrush. Make my photo look good. That's what I'm kind of hoping for.
Go back and reshoot this photograph.
Can you put the sun on the left? Kind of stuff, you know? But it does show an interesting sort of guide as to where the more intuitive sort of editing programs are going to go. I think it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And last on my list is auto-ramping technology. So someone's come up with a focus-ramping intervalometer time-lapse and view product. So basically it's an accessory that goes on your SLR.
Yeah.
That you can program A to do time lapse, which is really good.
Yeah.
You can control it where to focus during the so if you want to change focus during the time lapse.
Whoa.
Okay. It will change the focus. But no, that it will also show you on the device your photo as it's developing, as it's shooting. So you can preview it as you're shooting.
Wow.
And it will also show the preview on your phone.
Wow.
So if you're shooting a time lapse, you'll be able to preview it as it's shooting. I thought it looked pretty cool for people into that sort of stuff.
Wow.
It's going to be about $400, which doesn't seem that bad as an investment if you do a lot of this sort of stuff.
Absolutely. The ability to be able to see...
Kickstarter, so we don't know how it's going to go.
Yeah, exactly. But the ability to be able to see the image as it's developing would be a boon for anyone who shoots with, like 10-stop filters and the like.
Exactly. And stuff like that can already be done with like Olympus cameras. They can do it automatically with some of the Olympus models, which is pretty darn cool. But, I just thought you'd like to see that. And that's all I've got on my list.
Awesome.
I've got it through before my computer died in the bubble.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, mate, good to be back.
I want to share one little thing with you.
Yeah.
We had a horrible, horrible incident down here in Melbourne yesterday.
Oh, yes, we did.
We're recording on a Saturday for a very, very rare occasion. And I was doing a workshop in town yesterday.
Oh, really?
And I'm in this dead-end alleyway.
Yep.
With my group. And all of a sudden, there's a police helicopter hovering 200 feet above our head.
Wow.
Sirens coming from absolutely everywhere.
Yep.
And this guy ran down the alley. This guy ran down the alley towards us, realized it was a dead end, turned and ran the other way. And he yelled at us, "There's a gunman on the loose. He's already killed four people," and ran.
Yeah, right.
And people were running up the street at the end of the alleyway.
Yep.
Pretty frightening little moment. So I've told my group to stay back.
Yep.
And I'm walking towards the end of the alleyway. And this guy, all in black top, black pants, and a black backpack, comes to the end of the alleyway. And, of course, you see all this video footage. And the first thing that comes to mind is, God, this is the shooter, you know?
Yep.
And it wasn't him. He just kept on going. And this crazy man has gone on a rampage with a car driving three people, which is just diabolically bad. But, man, it just shows you just how quickly your fortunes can change in life.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there we are running a little workshop, and all of a sudden it's a life and death situation. You know? It's just a crazy, stupid world we live in.
Yep.
So,
And as you can tell, that is the end of Glyn's laptop. I did just get a text from him. I'm now recording this a couple of minutes later. I got a text from him saying, "The point I wanted to make is don't wait, get out and take pictures, go on a trip, make the effort to get up for sunrise. Life's too short for one day I'm gonna." Which is absolutely true. For those who are outside of Australia and may not have heard the story, this guy started off doing donuts on the middle of a very major intersection in Melbourne. When three unmarked police cars arrived, he then took off down one of the main streets of Melbourne, ploughed what appeared to be deliberately into a crowd of people, killed three, a fourth person later died, sent about 20 bodies flying into the air, apparently. Pretty sick, pretty deranged. But yeah, as Glyn said, don't wait for tomorrow. Do it today. Alrighty, so we should get on to David Marlin's book review. And David has an interesting tale to tell about one of the highest profile female photographers of our time. Take it away, David.
Thanks, Bruce. Now, unlike Bruce, whose gig as a sound engineer means he meets some famous people all the time, my only ever brush with fame was with Annie Leibovitz. It's become my standard brush with fame dinner story and soon sorts out those guests who appreciate photography and those who don't. The ones that don't are usually the ones who have fallen asleep face down in the mashed potatoes. Now, without boring you too much with my normal lengthy regale about the event, I will say we were picnicking in the Grampians on Australia Day in 1989. And Annie and her crew were setting up a commercial photo shoot. None of my companions knew who she was, and he decided not to do the gushy, oh, that's Annie Leibovitz, she's a famous photographer, and tell everyone. I just quietly got a front row seat to watch how Annie operated and a good opportunity to exchange pleasantries with her for a whole afternoon. There were no other people around but our small group. And I must confess, but since that day, I've always had a soft spot for her work. Annie Leibovitz, A Photographer's Life, 1990 to 2005, is one of her most well-known books. It's a large format, heavy tone, and it chronicles her life both professionally and privately in those years. And as Annie says in the book, she has one life, not two. The text is minimal. It consists of an introduction by Annie, talking of the era of the book, who influences, and about the book itself. The remainder of the book is devoted to the photographs with brief titles, and the photos are presented lavishly. The professional photographs depict some well-known and lesser-known personalities, and some of the photos are quite well-known, such as a pregnant Demi Moore or a skiing Arnold Schwarzenegger. But among the shots like these, there are some surprises. There is a really fine juxtaposition of two Las Vegas casino dancers, glamorously and colourfully semi-clad in their performance costumes. Turn the page, and there are two black and white portraits of the same women, shorn of the glamour, looking just like the lady next door. Perhaps it's an homage to Helmut Newton, but there are other photos that could be interpreted as being influenced by Arbus or Avedon, if you choose. There's a shot of Martina Navratilova that is clearly depicting an homage to Lewis Hine. My own experience of seeing Annie at work, though, is that she has a clear idea of what she's trying to achieve and a clear focus on bringing out the personality of her subject. Pre-visualisation, if you like, but also the camera sees more than the human eye, a nuance here and a fleeting look there. And if I recall, her camera of choice at the time was a twin-lens Mamiya, more often than not shot from the waist. So how many of us with our DSLRs consider bending or kneeling to get that perspective? How many of us have the patience to get that special something, that little special thing that might happen with a slight glance that will turn the photo into something special? It was clear that she had endless patience to achieve that. As well as the professional shots, there's some reportage. Most notably, a trip Annie and her partner Susan Sontag made to Sarajevo during the siege there in 93-94. There are photos of Susan conferring with reporters from a newspaper that was being produced in the war zone. Clearly there's difficulties. It's underground. They're sitting having a cup of coffee, and you would think it was normal if it wasn't for the surrounds. But a little later you turn a page in the book, and you're confronted by the famous photo of a child's bicycle that's fallen on the road, with bloodstains smeared across the concrete. There's no people in the photo. The clear evidence of the violence that has occurred is horrifyingly obvious. And the photo is simply titled Sarajevo 1994. Interspersed with these professional shoots and the reportage are photographs of friends and family, depicting a very rich and varied life. And people can relate to all of those. There's celebration and heartbreak. There's intimacy, illness, and death. These personal photos are really neither invasive or morbid. They're just the recordings from the life of a family, showing the reality of the fragility of the human existence. This is a book that you can never quite be sure what is on the next page, even if you've owned it for a while. And although it's large and not cheap, this book has not been out of print since it was first published in 2006. Booko's got the 2006 hardback listed from $105 to $180, and the paperback ranges from $57 to $140. But if you really enjoy looking at photographs, the hardback's the way to go. Cheers.
Wow. What a great claim to fame. Getting to meet and hang out with Annie Leibovitz. Nice work, mate. Nice work. All right, that shall do it for this week. Good to be back for the new year, and until we speak with you again, take care.
ShutterZincPodcast.com.
Another audio2.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email the boys at ShutterZincPodcast.com.